This is The Doctor Is In, your bi-weekly podcast that discusses all things technical and not so technical. The Doctor Is In podcast is produced by ARRL, the National Association for Amateur Radio, and sponsored by DX Engineering, helping you shrink the globe. See their website at www.dxengineering.com. And now, here's your host, QST Editor Steve Ford, WB8IMY, and the doctor himself, Joel Hallis, W1ZR.
Hello and welcome to The Doctor Is In. I'm Steve Ford, WB8IMY.
And I'm Joel Hallis, W1ZR.
Joel, let's talk about handheld transceivers. I'm sure you own dozens, probably.
I don't know how many. They just, every time I open a drawer, I find another one.
Well, you know, they've been around in ham circles since the beginning of the grand FM craze, which was roughly, I think the first amateur radio handhelds came into being sometime around the early 1970s, if I'm not mistaken.
That's my recollection.
And now they're just huge. Everybody, or virtually everybody owns one, right?
I think that's true.
It does seem that. I mean, I remember 2-meter handhelds were the commonplace item. Yep. But of course, now you're hardly fashionable if you don't have at least a dual band, if not a tri-band transceiver, handheld transceiver.
Some of them even do HF for some reason.
Well, or at least listen down there. But if we're talking to somebody who maybe does not own one, what sort of features should one look for?
Well, that's a good question. And I think typically these days, the first transceiver most hams get is a VHF or VHF-UHF handheld. That seems to be the trend, at least around here.
For clubs, technician licensees, sure.
Yeah. The clubs tend to focus around public service and other kinds of community activities that sort of lean towards that kind of operation. So if you have a handheld, you can participate in the road rally and check people off as they go by or whatever. And that tends to be where people start. Unfortunately, a lot of people stop there, which is too bad. But that's where people start. As you mentioned, for years, the standard was 2-meter FM using analog modulation. That was
right. That
was what they did. And in many areas, that is still the most common kind of situation.
It is still the most common VHF-UHF mode, yes.
I think that's true. Now, added some years later were CTCSS, or private line tone generation on transmit, which allowed you to access the repeater station that you wanted rather than all of the repeaters on that frequency in the area, which used to make people crazy. And that is now almost always universally available on amateur equipment. And I wouldn't consider getting a FM 2-meter handheld that didn't have a private line or CTCSS.
Oh, absolutely not. No.
It's just almost useless. I have a couple of them, but I use them mainly for within the house intercoms or something.
Yes.
A car to car thing. Another thing that used to be popular on FM handhelds, but is not so much anymore, is having a touch tone pad that would allow sending out dual frequency tones that telephones use for dialing. They were used primarily for this auto patch function that repeaters had, in which they had a device adjacent to the repeater connected to phone lines. And if you accessed it with the right coding, you could bring up a dial tone and make typically a local call from your repeater for connecting to something off the network. So you could, again, you couldn't order a pizza because that was commercial, but you could call your spouse and say, I'm on my way home from the meeting and I'll be 10 minutes later, 2 hours late, whatever.
Right.
So it's very handy and good for emergency use too. You could call the police, call any emergency services.
The touchtones were also useful for controlling devices.
Yes, they still are. And in many cases, the repeater control operator uses those same touchtones to cause functions to happen in the repeater. So you can, if there's something going awry with the repeater, if it's not transmitting steadily, so you can get into it, you can shut it down, or you can cause it to change power level, whatever needs to be done, or you can turn off the PL tone if you need to have wide open access for some emergency or whatever, so that it can be handy. In fact, it used to be there were all kinds of functions that people did. You could get the repeater to tell you whether you were on frequency or not.
That's right, yes.
I don't think people do that anymore, but it used to be all kinds of fancy things that people would build into the repeaters.
Especially now that those touchtone pads are vanishing off of most handhelds.
Yeah, you don't see them. And it's kind of too bad. I guess I'm not a great cell phone fan, and I kind of miss having auto patch. But anyway, so you don't, you know, you don't need that anymore for most folks, but it doesn't hurt to have it on there.
No.
And some analog handhelds also offer built-in APRS. Now, that can be added on to a separate
yes.
set of equipment, but it's kind of handy to have that and can support some kinds of emergency communication, assuming that other people have appropriate equipment.
And to do that, it has to have a global positioning system receiver built into it, of course. A number of handhelds do. It was kind of a rarity a few years ago, but it's becoming a little more common, at least among the higher end.
Right.
More expensive handhelds.
Yeah. So you know where you are. That's always
handy. That's always helpful. But for me, memories are critical, and how many memories and how I can sort them and so on.
I have trouble remembering what's in what memory. But anyway, I must admit I don't use it that often. But I think the biggest change in the past decade or so has been the profusion of digital modulation schemes.
Yes.
And that's kind of changed the whole structure of VHF handhelds. The early amateur providers started with ICOM offering radios using the Japanese standard D-Star system, which provided digital voice operation as well as network data communication using special repeaters.
Yes.
Now, the problem with that, or a problem with that, is in many areas, repeater pairs are very limited. And what that meant was if you're going to put in a D-Star repeater, which doesn't support analog FM, you had to take down a repeater that did support analog FM. So somebody with a regular old analog handheld couldn't get through that repeater anymore and put up the D-Star. But it had a lot of advantages. This provided digital voice operation as well as network data communication. And the repeaters were a special type that could handle this, and they could be networked over the phone system or in other ways between the repeaters. And they had a lot of capability there. In addition, all D-Star transceivers that I ever encountered also supported standard analog FM. So that
yes.
meant they were backward compatible.
That's true.
And now Kenwood also provides transceivers and repeaters that use D-Star. I don't know if anybody else does.
No, it's Kenwood with that one particular model, and then, of course, all the ICOM D-Star units.
And not too long ago, Yaesu entered the market with its own proprietary digital voice and data system called C4. FM.
Or as they call it, system fusion, yes.
Which is another digital system that has similar features to D-Star but is not compatible with it. And then to this has been added a number of systems designed for commercial users but now popular with amateurs as surplus early equipment has become available at low cost. Some manufacturers in the Far East also make compatible equipment that can support amateur as well as commercial users. Some of the popular systems are APCO P25, a trunked public safety digital-only system that includes products offered by multiple manufacturers. Another digital system that has become very popular is digital mobile radio.
Oh, yeah, DMR.
DMR, yeah. A standard system that is similar but not compatible with the other systems.
So we have three primarily, if you don't count P25, we have three digital systems that you might find in handheld transceivers that are all incompatible with each other.
Yes, exactly. It's kind of, to me, it's a kind of a, not a great, I mean, one of the things about ham radio is you'd like to be able to talk to other hams.
Yes.
So you have to say, well, see, what kind of system are you on? Well, I can't talk to you, sorry. You know, you can always shift back to analog, but if you want to participate in what's going on in some kind of a group, you need to be able to have the kind of equipment that they use.
True.
Now, why move to digital? If signals are strong, digital voice will generally have a higher signal-to-noise ratio than FM. But if FM is strong, it has a high signal-to-noise ratio anyway in
yes.
terms of voice. So what's the deal? But anyway, while FM gets noisy, it gets weaker. Digital stays about the same until it reaches a threshold, at which point it suddenly is no longer useful at all. It goes kerchunk and it's just garbage. Whereas FM can usually still function at that point.
Yes.
So it's more gradual roll off.
And of course, the digital radios, in addition to voice, carry data channels, call signs, what have you, that are going separately.
And they can send data much more efficiently than analog
oh, yeah.
systems with modems and so forth. So digital systems have their advantages, but the big disadvantage, in my view, is the fact that they're not compatible with each other, and you have your own little island of some particular modulation.
That's true.
So how to pick a handheld? Well, the answer is simple. Go with whatever your local group is settled on.
Yes.
No matter how much or how many whiz-bang features your favorite digital mode offers, if yours is the only radio of that type in the area, you end up only being able to talk to yourself.
Or your buddy that happened to buy the same radio. That's right. Yeah.
He made the same mistake. So your local club or public service group has probably put up a repeater to support the mode of choice, whether it's analog or it's a one of the digital modes.
That's usually the case.
And if that's the case, you know, get involved with the club. And if it's a club you want to be doing things with, you probably want to get the kind of radio that works with their repeater. There will always still be a place for FM transceivers, so don't toss them, but line up with what your group is doing when you go towards a digital transceiver.
Absolutely. Well, let's take a break, Joel, and we will hear from DX Engineering, and we will be back.
Ever talk to a salesperson who didn't know the difference between a rotator and a rotary phone, or a Yagi and a yo-yo, or a ballon and a ballerina? You'll never have that problem with DX Engineering. When you call us, you'll talk directly with knowledgeable amateur radio experts, people who speak your language. When you contact DX Engineering, you're dealing with operators who are as passionate about the hobby as you are. This means better service, expert technical advice, and a commitment to your complete satisfaction, even long after your purchase has been made. Whether you're newly licensed or a longtime operator, you'll always find a friendly ham who understands exactly what you need on the other end of the line. Plus, you'll find a huge selection of amateur radio equipment, get the fastest shipping in the ham universe, and shipping is free on most orders over $99. Let's talk about your station. Visit us at dxengineering.com. That's dxengineering.com.
And we're back, Joel, and I have an interesting question for you. This one comes from Mark WF9Y, and he's asking, one of my antennas is a G5RV dipole. A ham up in Canada recommended I put a bunch of ground radials beneath it, the more the better. He said that he did it, and it helps his performance. I've never heard of this before. What are your thoughts? I've never heard of this either, frankly. I'm going to be curious to see what you have to say about that.
Yeah, I guess it's interesting because I think what it comes from is many antenna publications show antenna patterns of antennas over perfect ground and antennas over less perfect ground and so forth. So you say, oh, well, I want an antenna over perfect ground, so it looks like that pattern. Well, by putting ground radials underneath it, you kind of are approaching that. But the question is that what you really want? And it depends very much on what your needs are. It certainly will increase the ground connectivity beneath your antenna if you add radials. And this may help or may be an issue depending on your objectives. An improved ground beneath and connected to a vertical monopole does improve the efficiency by getting more power into the antenna.
Oh, no question. But of course, in this case, we're talking about a horizontal dipole.
A horizontal antenna. With a horizontal antenna, such as your G5RV, what will happen is that signals will tend to be reflected upward, which if your antenna is less than a half wavelength high, will be good for short range or medium range near vertical incident sky wave propagation.
Okay.
Which can be, you know, that's well, very important for a lot of people. And this will improve your regional communication, not by a lot, but by a little, especially on 80 and 40 meters. But the other side of that coin is it will reduce the power available for lower angle, long distance communication.
That's what I thought.
So it depends on what your objectives are. If you want to work DX, you don't want to do that unless your antenna is very high. And actually, it won't even matter for that because for DX, low angle radiation, you don't need the ground enhanced below the antenna. You need it some 100 feet away or something to support the low angle radiation.
So I can take a big sheet of metal and put it 100 feet from my antenna, and that will improve it, huh?
In that direction.
Not that I would ever seriously do such a thing.
I've been involved in programs like we had I worked on an HF over the horizon radar system at one point for one of our government agencies. And we had a ground screen that extended out 800 feet in front of the antenna.
Wow.
For that purpose, to support low angle radiation. That happened to have been a vertical antenna, but the same thing would have worked for a horizontal as well. And
my wife wouldn't permit that.
No, and probably some of your neighbors. Not like having a wire mesh over their house.
Lots of chicken wire, yes.
Yes. So that can be done. It has been done. It takes a lot of money to do that if you figure out how much wire that takes. But you can get a sense of how this all works by looking at those radiation patterns in those books where you have one that shows the radiation over a perfect ground. Look at a low horizontal antenna and you'll see the radiation going mostly up. Then you look at a pattern for the same antenna over free space and you'll see that the elevation is equal at all elevation angles. Now, of course, even a real crummy ground is not quite that. You're not going to penetrate the Earth and go towards the center of the Earth.
No.
So the radiation going straight down is not going to go there. But you see that there's a lot more radiation going off at low angles in that case than there is the case with a perfect ground under it. Now, the radiation at the low angles will not be as strong as it will be when it's reflected upwards, where you get the benefit of the reflected wave. But nonetheless, the radiation at low angles over free space will be higher than it will be for a low horizontal antenna over a perfect ground. So that's kind of what you're up against.
Yes.
So the real situation that you have will be sort of in between. And one thing you can do is you can go to take a trip to your town engineer's office, and he might be able to give you some ground connectivity information about what the connectivity is in your area. And then some simple antenna modeling can show you exactly what happens in your situation. And you can actually try putting the radials in the model and see what happens. Now, most antenna modeling programs will not allow you to put radials underground. There are some exceptions, but they tend to be quite expensive. On the other hand, if you model the radials a few inches above ground, programs can handle that, and that'll be very similar to what the performance you get from having a buried radio. So you can actually find out what it will do for your situation.
That would be helpful.
And decide whether it makes sense for you. So if you want near vertical incident sky wave, that will help a little. And if you want DX, it will hurt a little. So that's basically it.
Well, thank you, Joel.
My pleasure.
If you have a question for the doctor, email us at doctor@arrl.org. The Doctor Is In podcast is sponsored by DX Engineering at www.dxengineering.com. Background music provided by Purple Planet at www.purple-planet.com. This podcast is copyright ARRL. All rights are reserved. Until next time, I'm QST Managing Editor Becky Schoenfeld, W1BXY 73, and thanks for listening.